Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. By the way, you can listen live over the telephone. Write this number down. Boy, are we getting flooded. I was told yesterday that my office received over 1,000 calls, as did Luann Panessi. Where's Gary? He's not on, you know, WBAI. Well, how many times did I give you the number? How many times did I say that one day you may turn on the radio and I may not be there? So that day came. So again, please write down the numbers. You can listen live Monday to Friday by calling 701-801-3662, 701-801-3662, or you can download this program by calling 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now, because you didn't hear everything I was saying, I'll just repeat it. Some good research, University of Sydney, showed that one way we can better deal with anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, is through stimulating natural opiates. And how do you stimulate natural opiates? Well, I don't want to do it with drugs. That does not work. Instead, a nice walk, power walk, that will get endorphins going. And those endorphins are the feel-good hormone stimulators. So if you did a good half hour to 45-minute walk in the morning, power walk, or a jog, or biking, you're stimulating those opiates, natural brain opiates. If you are with a loved one, that stimulates them. If you're with a pet, that stimulates. So all these things that we love to do de-stress us, but also allow a continued sense of warmth. And that's because they're now realizing that no matter whether your fear or anxiety is real, or if it's simply conditioned response, it all comes from these neural circuits of interconnected nerve cells and synaptic activity in the brain's amygdala that allow neurons to pass electrical or chemical signals to each other. And these specialized neural circuits control these emotions. So when you are doing something like, let's say, jogging or biking, you're actually stimulating the body to create this, and that allows a better communication in the brain. Also, spiritual retreats change the feel-good chemical system in the brain. This is from the Marcus Institute of Integrative Health at Thomas Jefferson University. Most Americans are aware that there are times in life where you just got to stop everything. You just got to get off the treadmill. You wake up every day, you're almost always stressed. Why? Because what you're doing that day is not for your comfort, for your joy, for your creativity, for your relaxation. It's because you have to pay bills, in part because you've created a certain standard of living. Not always, but more often than not, the more educated we become, the more successful we become in a given career, the more we allow ourselves to experience an expanded standard of living. We assume that the standard of living equates to a quality of life. Now, sometimes that may be the case, but of the 70,000 people I've counseled, including billionaires and some of the most famous celebrities, including members of the royal family, it's not true. To the contrary, I can't tell you how many times I've counseled people who seem to have it all. Most people would be extremely envious. Gee whiz, look what you have in your life. You should be really happy. And the people are not. They're highly stressed. Why? Because we find, myself and many others who live a more, let's say, spiritual grounded existence, that it's not what you own, it's not what you possess. Rather, it's simply the quality of everything else makes a difference. And so that's crucial. So when you wake up in the morning, are you waking up because you have to go to work and therefore you have to tolerate the job, the people there, the commutes, and everything else involved with it? Does it really increase the quality of your life? Are you doing meaningful things? Some people, the answer is yes. More often than not, it's no. So what this does, this gives us a point where we have to actually stop. And when we stop, we have to ask ourselves, how much control do I have over my life in this moment? Not tomorrow. I don't know. Not yesterday. But today. And that's when we say, could I use a break? Could I use a relaxation break? Could I use a spiritual break? And that's when people frequently decide that, you know, maybe they can enhance their well-being. Maybe they should go to a meditative or spiritual, even a religious retreat, as a way to reset their daily life and enhance their well-being. Maybe get better things in perspective. So that's important. Now, that said, there was an article in Religion, Brain, and Behavior. Here's what they say, quote, since serotonin and dopamine are part of the reward and emotional systems of the brain, it helps us understand why these practices result in powerful, positive emotional experiences. Our study showed significant changes in dopamine and serotonin transporters after a 7-day retreat, which could help prime participants for the spiritual experiences that they reported, end quote. So the post-retreat scans revealed decreases in dopamine transporter and serotonin transporter binding, which could make more of the neurotransmitters available to the brain. And this is associated with the positive emotions and spiritual feelings in particular. And dopamine, if you don't know, is responsible for meditating, cognition, emotional and movement, while serotonin is involved in emotional regulation and mood. So I think this is very important. And that's one of the reasons that if you have a chance to attend any form of meditative, spiritual, or motivational retreat, it is not for someone else to judge you. What are you going off there for? Someone just asked me recently, they had gone to a Tony Robbins retreat. Why don't I ever mention Tony Robbins? Well, it's not for me. But I cannot say that it's not for other people. Thousands and thousands of people go to his retreat. They spend lots of money. And in fact, Tony asked me, would I do a workshop in Tahiti years ago for just 75 couples who had spent, I believe, $75,000 a couple to be there. It's a lot of money. But if people can afford it and they want to get away, it doesn't mean it's going to transform their life, but it does mean that whether it's, you know, one for free somewhere in Woodstock or one where you go and pay a lot of money, if you can get to a different, more enlightened, a lighter, a more joyful place in your mind so when you come home you can apply that, then it's worth it. And that's why I believe that whether it's Wayne Dyer, whoever it might be out there, if you have a chance to enjoy those weekends or weeks, do so, because this study shows you're really enhancing dopamine and serotonin in your brain, and that can positively affect you. Is there a link between telomeres, those are the end caps of chromosomes, and cancer? Now, I haven't heard this study before, and this is from the University of Bristol, which is in the United Kingdom. By the way, just as a primer, I never want to assume that everyone listening every day has listened for years and would know this. We have new audience all over the world. We're heard in almost every country on the planet. And so I like to give little primers. So here's just a little primer. Telomeres are regions of repetitive DNA at the end of the human chromosome. Let's make it simpler. This is the little plastic tip on the end of a shoestring that keeps a shoestring from unraveling. And they protect the end of the chromosome from damage. And while shorter telomeres are biological markers of older aging and have been linked to many diseases, including cancer and cardiovascular disease, whether these associations are causal is not completely known, but it's suspected. A team from Bristol Population Health Science, a special research institute, the University of Bristol, investigated the effect of longer telomeres on the risks of 83 diseases, including cancer and cardiovascular disease and diabetes and psychiatric diseases and autoimmune diseases. 420,000 people. That was compared to 1,093,000 controls. And this is really interesting. And the research team found that the longer the telomeres appeared to increase the risk of several cancers, including glioma and serious low malignant potential ovarian cancer and lung adenocarcinomas and bladder cancer. And the question is, why? And here's what was not taken into account. They did not look at all the risk factors. So you may have some longer telomeres because you have longer, let's say a longer lasting gene. You just happen to be from a family that has long genes, which means that you're going to live probably up to 8 years longer. It can go 4 years on either side, meaning you could die 4 years shorter or you could live 4 years longer. That's the general rule. But what they didn't do, they didn't check the telomeres in vegans or people living in de-stressed environments. For example, you take the average person in England, there's a lot of stress. There's massive unemployment. There's great social anxiety because of all the conflict that is going on there in the country, politically and ethnically, and the uncertainty of their future. Now, you take a country in, let's say, in the Mediterranean area, like Spain or Italy, and yes, they have economic problems. They deal with stress differently. Now take a look at the diet in England, one of the worst diets in the world. And take a look at the diet in the Mediterranean, one of the best diets in the world. Now take a look at their telomeres. That's the only way you'll know. So when we're told, oh, well, you know, longer telomeres may increase disease, no proof that that is causal. But I do have proof because I'm the one who did the research at the Institute of Applied Biology. I was the head of anti-aging research there for over 33 years. When I took rats, and there'd be 1,000 rats living in normal conditions in a laboratory downstairs, and upstairs mine was considered the kind of the odd, strange place because I didn't have cages, I had natural lighting, I didn't have rat pellets, I had organic foods and juices made fresh daily, I had soft, soothing music. And so it was a completely different environment. And their rats lived their normal lifespan and died. Mine didn't. The rats upstairs frequently, in some cases, doubled their lifespan. And the average was about 30% longer. The telomeres were longer. Now, when you can take the telomeres, which you can now, there was a time when we didn't have the technology, now you can, and you start seeing people smoke, you shorten the telomeres. Drink alcohol, you shorten the telomeres. Eat the traditional American diet, you shorten the telomeres. Stress, you shorten the telomeres. Toxic environment, you shorten the telomeres. I think the preponderance of evidence shows that the shortened telomeres, the shorten your lifespan. And there's probably 100 studies, quality studies on that. So this is just a new study. I wanted to share it with you because I wanted to give you that input before it gets out there and then people poo-hoo anything that's healthy, saying, well, that doesn't make any sense. It sure does make sense. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to be back in a moment. We have a lot of program for you. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you who are just joining us. I'm Gary Nall, on the road, and hope that you're having a nice day. And we have a really strong program coming in today. We'll be getting to all of the different issues in just a moment. Tomorrow, I'm going to be having an interesting program, creating a manifesto for developing a green mind. What are the many ways to awaken and turn our minds to think more sustainably about our lives and our communities? So that is what we're doing. We'll have Professor Jules Preddy on tomorrow, a vice chancellor and professor of environmental and society at the University of Essex in the United Kingdom. Some of the great minds on the planet will be on tomorrow to talk about creating a sustainable mind. So you won't want to miss that. Today, our society is not creating a sustainable mindset. It is creating an atrophied mindset. What do I mean by that? Well, we're hardening our mind, and partly it's because we've been conditioned over the last 40 to 50 years to believe that the culture that is dominant, the body politics that's dominant, the personalities who are dominant, are the ones we should trust. Rarely do people look around and say, hold on a second. Didn't you promise that if we believed in you and voted for you, that we would end wars, we would close down all these detention centers, including Guantanamo, we would stop torturing people as if this were the Middle Ages and we were waterboarding them, we would stop income inequality, we would stop racial profiling, we would treat every person in our country and around the world as a sacred being until they chose not to be sacred, but at least we would start off respecting their rights. And ours were not to subordinate theirs. Our rights were to honor theirs. Whatever happened to that? Well, it went the way a lot of things go. It went through illusions. So what does our culture look like today? For that, we'd have to look through the eyes of Henry Giroux, who you heard recently on this program. And Henry looks at things a little differently. He's looking and seeing the neo-fascists controlling almost every part of our existence. And I would agree with that. That's why I have done so many series, the latest been The Hidden Hand, before that The Deep State, before that Fascism in the USA, before that The Police State. All these are simply pieces of a puzzle showing you that when you wake up each day, you don't think about your house being broken into by a SWAT team. You don't think of being stopped in a car ride somewhere and the police taking all of your possessions through asset seizure. You don't think about someone coming in and saying, did you go on the internet a year and a half ago and sign a petition that you didn't want to see animal cruelty? Yeah. Well, come with us. Where are we going? We're not telling you. What did I do wrong? We're not telling you. Well, don't I have habeas corpus? You have no rights. There is a new law. It's called the National Defense Authorization Act. And that law says that you and no other American has any rights when we deem you don't have them. Can I call a lawyer? Can't call a lawyer. Can I know what you're charging me with? We don't have to tell you. How long will I be detained? We could detain you for the rest of your life, or we could kill you. The president has the right to kill you. We've allowed the president of the United States to be a murderer. Yes, the president of the United States is a murderer. Well, surely the ACLU or some liberal should oppose that. I don't expect any of the Republicans to oppose that. That's just hardwired in. But you, you were stupid enough to think that we actually had some liberals in power. We don't. Well, how did we get here? Language. First, language is emptied of any sense of ethics and compassion. And second, a survival of the fittest discourse provides a breeding ground for racial and social sorting. Haven't you seen all those shows where the guys swing on ropes and jump across water and climb all to compete? And how about all the gladiator shows? And how about all the cooking shows? It's no longer just going on like Julia Child's and making a dish. healthy or not, and sharing your personality and your little homilies, it's now you're in competition with three other people. One of you will be fired and denigrated because you didn't do a good job. Everything today is survival of the fittest. How did you do at the box office? Oh, it didn't do so well. Oh, well, then your phone won't ring. The agents won't have a deal for you. But don't worry, there are other people to take your place. And then we had the third, and that is references to justice are viewed as treasonous. As at the present moment, labeling dismissively as fake news anything that the alternative news offers. So, an example. Let's say that I do about 15,000 hours of research as a scholar, as a PhD and post honors and a fellow, as a research scientist and a professor. I had the background and skills to know what is important and not in doing research. So when I create a topic, whether for a book or a documentary or an article or a broadcast, I know that I'm held to a higher standard than a regular lay person. I know that people are using my information to make quality choices in their life. Therefore, I take it very seriously, and we really put everything to an acid test. So when I do research and I interview 10 other people who've done anywhere from 10 to 20,000 hours of research, and they all say the same thing. They all say, I cannot find the evidence to support the safety and efficacy of vaccines, either all of them or any given one. Well, then, if we cannot disprove ourselves, then we are challenging the existing paradigm. So just the idea that I would go on the air and I would say that I believe that our freedom of choice must also have the choice to say no about what goes into our bodies, our children's bodies, and I don't want my child to have a false diagnosis of ADD. I don't want them to give them a toxic drug like Ritalin. I don't want a hepatitis B vaccine into my baby. I don't want my father and mother in a nursing home being given drugs to keep them sedated till they die. So I'm not saying that because it's arbitrary. I'm saying that based upon my scholarship. So you would think that those in power, those who have the authority to give those directions and diagnosis and prescriptions, would be equally or even far superior in their knowledge. The fact is the average homemaker who's had a vaccine-injured child is far and away much more aware and scientifically accurate in their research on the safety and efficacy of vaccines because it was personal. It was their kid, normal, and took the vaccines, wasn't. So today, for that parent or for me or anyone else talking about vaccines, you're now put on the list as fake news. Even if you ask, show me in my statement what is wrong. If you can't, then don't call it fake news, but they start off saying it's fake news or denigrating or quackery with the hope that no one takes you seriously. Also, the discourse of disposability extends into an increasing number of groups, and ignorance becomes militarized and forced not through the appeal to reason, but through the use of language of humiliation and eventually through the machinery of force. Any form of dependency is viewed as a form of weakness and becomes a referent and eventually a basis for social cleansing. That is, any form of solidarity not based upon market-driven values is subject to derision and potential punishment. Also, the language of borders and walls replaces the discourse of bridges and compassion. If you want to understand why people are coming across the border, then have a dialogue on it. Have an open dialogue. Have an open discussion. Why are people wanting to come here? Why are we not going there? That's where you begin. You don't begin with a wall. You don't take someone who has raped a person, a child, which recently happens, and use that as a flashpoint to condemn an entire group of people who would never rape or harm anyone, who are as offended as you or I by that kind of very hostile and primordial and primitive attitude, just as you wouldn't take one basketball player that has sexually raped a woman and condemn all basketball players, or one football player who beat his wife in an elevator and condemn all football players. it would be wrong. Now, any place else, we would say it's wrong. You don't take one restaurant that has contaminated salmonella in their meat and say all restaurants of this same type are to be closed down because there's potential for pollution. The kind of broad, generalized hate campaign is wrong. And yet that's what these people master. Violence becomes the most important method of addressing social problems and mediating all relationships. Hence the increasing criminalization of a wide range of behaviors in the United States. And the word democracy disappears from official mandated state language. The critical media is gradually defamed and eventually outlawed, or it compromises itself based upon who owns it. Even the alternative media is compromised. Did I not hear on Democracy Now! The support of taking over Libya, attacking Libya? Well, that was wrong. Every part of it was wrong. Did that same host say, I apologize for all the suffering that has been brought upon the good people of Libya, the most progressive state, the most country of all the 54 countries in Africa, the most progressive for women, especially Muslim women, more women of freedom who are Muslim in Libya than any other Muslim country in the world. More prosperity, better medical system, better education, better everything. And yet, Democracy Now! Was one of the voices corkling for condemning that, condemning Gaddafi. And how about the same with Syria? So it's not just the mainstream media, the alternative liberal media is equally guilty on many of these same principles. So where are we going to turn? The liberal media has been compromised. The mainstream media has been compromised. And then all forms of critical education present in theory and method and institutionality are destroyed. We don't have room for in our higher educations for the critically thinking, non-snowflake, cupcake, powder puff student who, if you look at them in a way that they don't understand, must rush immediately into the infirmary and have a group of psychiatrists give them a collective hug and sprinkle pixie dust on their head, while their parents rush out of their offices and pick up the cell phones and condemn the teacher, how dare you say anything that my little precious perfects would be offended by. So where is there room in university for critical challenges where you stand up and say, I do not believe this, I do not accept this, this is not right, I am not here to be indoctrinated, I am not here to be prejudiced, I am not here to become an extension of you, professor, or you students' lifestyles and behavior. I'm here to maximize my critical capacity to be the best I can be as a human being. Well, good luck on finding a university in the United States that allows you to do that. Good luck. Homeschooling, yes. But not in any of the major institutions. It is an embarrassment. I refused to. I told my agent, don't book me into another university or college. I cannot, I will not compromise true thought and freedom for how people feel. I don't give a about how anyone feels. I do care about how you think, but we haven't gotten to that place yet. So what we do in America today is we share fears. Everything's about fears. But then when you share your fears, that replaces shared responsibilities and everyone is reduced to the status of a potential terrorist. Watch constantly, listen to constantly, humiliated through our body searches at border crossings and airports and now bus stations. All vestiges of the welfare state disappear and millions are subject to fending for themselves. Well, what if they can't? Too bad. What if they have children? Too bad. Shouldn't have the children. But what if it's not their fault? Isn't there something that we should be able to feel in the way of empathy to reach out and help those people since others have so much? No. Massive inequality always comes with the abridged power and wealth and income that generates only to those who are the elite. So underlying all this is one of the most powerfully oppressive ideologies of neoliberal neo-fascism. That is, the only unit of agency and analysis that matters is the isolated individual. Shared trust and visions of economic equality and political justice give way to individual terrors and self-blame, reinforced by the neoliberal notion that people are solely responsible for their political, economic, and social misfortunes. Never the corporations, never the educational system, never the misinformation, never the lies. What lies? Get a mammogram. Prevent breast cancer. Lie. Radiation is harmless. Lies. You need this. You have social anxiety disorder. Take this selective serotonin ereotypic inhibitor. Lies. We have a thriving democracy. Lies. We have one rule of law, which we are all held equally. Lie. The environment's doing great. No such thing as global warming. After all, didn't in a way bring a snowball to Congress? If anybody could bring a snowball to Congress, that must prove that there's no such thing as global warming. Lies. John McCain what? He's just a human lie. Likes to hang out with those terrorists. That we have people in Washington, D.C. who care about you. Lies. People in the media who care about you. Lies. Institutions are there to create critical thinking people. Lies. The food you eat, you wouldn't be given if the FDA or the USDA or the National Institutes of Health found that it would cause disease. We're not going to allow heart disease, cancer, and children and adults. Lies. The media looks at all issues before it presents it as fact. Lies. Everywhere you look, you're in a swamp of lies. And the liberal critics argue that choice, absent the notion of constraints, feeds Ayn Rand's culture of rabid individualism and unchecked greed. What they miss in this neo-fascist moment is that the systemic evil, the cruelty, and the moral irresponsibility at the heart of neoliberalism makes Ayn Rand's lunacy look tame. Rand's world has been surpassed by a ruling class of financial elites that embody not the old-style greed of Gordon Gekko in the film Wall Street, but the psychopathic personality of Patrick Bateman in American Psycho. The notion that saving money by reducing the taxes of the rich justifies eliminating health care for 24 million people is just one example of how this culture of cruelty and hardening of the culture will play out. So, my friends, dark times are truly upon us. There will be an acceleration of acts of violence under the Trump administration and conditions for eliminating this new stage of state violence will mean not only understanding the roots of neo-fascism in the United States and that it's been going under Reagan, Bush Sr., Obama, Clinton, and Bush Jr., and now Trump. It will be 40 years of nonstop neo-fascism, globalization, for what? Power? How unfortunate. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. We're going to talk now for the remainder of the program about the GOP Congress and its recent attack on internet privacy, data collection, and civil freedoms. Joining us from San Francisco is Dr. Jeremy Gillula, G-I-L-L-U-L-A. He is the senior technologist for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the nation's leading a consumer protection organization defending our civil liberties in the digital world of the internet and telecommunications, such as net neutrality, surveillance technologies, and the mobile phone privacy. Earlier, Jeremy worked with the programming of robots and drones and autonomous cars, including federal DARPA challenges. And he holds degrees from California Tech and computer sciences and also a PhD from Stanford for his work with machine learning algorithms that can be applied to unmanned aerial vehicles And his articles about threats to digital freedoms can be found at the Foundation's website, EFF.org. Nice to have you with us today, Jeremy.
Thanks so much for having me, Gary. I'm really looking forward to it.
I wanted to address this topic because so often there are amendments and bill writers and other policy approvals with additions that go completely unnoticed by the public. And they're ignored by the mainstream media and are rarely ever in the best interest of the public. And the assault on our digital freedoms, such as private internet access and the expansion of surveillance provisions to federal intelligence agencies and private contractors, is one that is rarely heard of. For example, right now, few Americans know that Congress is ready to act on overturning the Federal Communications Commission's rules that prevent the large telecom companies such as Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast from selling our personal information, including our web browser and application usage histories, to third-party vendors. And this is being slipped into the Congressional Review Act, which will be voted on shortly. And few people know this. So please take your time and explain what the Republicans in Congress are trying to ram through in the Review Act and what will be the ultimate impact upon citizens' lives. You've identified five main consequences of this repeal of the FCC rules, so please go through them. The forum is yours.
Sure thing. So as you said, the what's happening is actually the vote is happening as we speak. In fact, I had to mute it to come onto the radio, and it might be done, at least in the Senate. They'll now proceed to the House. But what the Republicans in Congress are doing, don't ask me why privacy is a partisan issue, but it has become so, is they're repealing some rules that the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, put into effect last year that would basically prohibit your internet service provider, you know, Comcast, Verizon, whoever, from using your personal data for something besides providing you internet access. And, of course, the primary use, they want to be able to take your personal data, sell it to advertisers, to marketers, use it to, you know, insert ads into your traffic themselves. And so it's a little strange. It's the one, EFF tends to be a fairly, you know, anti-government regulation type of organization. But given that people really don't have a lot of choices in who they get their internet access from, we actually support the FCC's rules, which, again, would prohibit all of these terrible practices. And now Republicans in Congress are essentially trying to repeal those rules. So we got privacy protections, and now the Republicans in Congress are trying to repeal them. And so there's a wide variety of things. I recently wrote a post on five creepy things that ISPs could do, that, you know, your internet service provider could do, if these rules do get repealed. And it's kind of scary that the least scary thing on that list is just straight up selling your data to marketers. And this is something they're already doing. They sell information about whether shoppers are checking out competitor prices, about the age ranges and genders of people who visited a store. Because remember, we're not just talking, you know, wireline. We're not just talking cable or DSL. We're talking about the mobile providers, too. We're talking about Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile. So if you're carrying a phone, they know where you're going, and they can sell that data to marketers if these rules get repealed. And so that's probably the least scary thing. We've seen internet service providers hijack people's searches before. So, you know, you type into your browser, you know, say I want to go on, you know, maybe I'm looking for a engagement gift for my wife or something like that, and I type in, you know, or an engagement ring for my future wife. Say I was doing this a couple years ago. I type in, you know, engagement ring, and ISPs were intercepting your search and then redirecting you. Instead of going to, you know, Google or Bing or Yahoo, they would just take you straight to some company's page, and of course that company had paid them to do this. And so there we're talking about just taking the customer's data and basically throwing the customer somewhere they did not expect to be. So, you know, you type in, you type in radio show in your browser, and it instead takes you to, you know, to directly to Rush Limbaugh's website or something like that, instead of just showing you a, you know, a search result page. We've seen ISPs snoop through people's traffic and just insert ads. So this is putting ads on top of the ads that are already there, where they just, you know, they look through your traffic and they say, okay, you know, Jeremy is browsing these different websites, you know, and so based off that, let's figure out what ads we can target at him. We've seen ISPs pre-install spyware on your phone. If you buy your phone from your Verizon or T-Mobile or what have you, we've seen them pre-install spyware that can tell them what websites you're visiting. So again, this is them basically trying to ingest as much information as they can about your activity online. And then probably the creepiest thing we've seen them do is actually inserting undetectable, undeletable tracking cookies into your traffic. So this is, you know, say you're a pretty savvy consumer and you've installed various, you know, ad blockers and tracker blockers into your browser. They said, okay, well, too bad. We're just going to put cookies in regardless so that you can be tracked. And there's nothing you can do about it. We saw Verizon do this 2 years ago. They didn't bother to tell their customers they were doing this. And even when there was a whole, they started getting blowback, they said, nah, it's okay, nobody really cares. And they kept doing it until essentially the FCC said, no, you have to stop. And so these types of really creepy things with ISPs spying on your traffic, spying on your web browsing, spying on what apps you use on your phone, that's what these rules would stop. And now Republicans are trying to kill these rules.
Let's go into this a little further, if you would, please.
Sure.
Let's say that the average person does not want anyone listening in on their phone calls, does not want someone to turn on by remote their cell phone, does not want their television looking back and recording what they're seeing. Let's say you're in your bedroom. The average person is clueless. They don't know that the television has the capacity to both record audio and video of them. What has happened to us as a society that allows people to spy on us as if it's their right to spy on us for whatever reasons? It could be political. Do you really think that all the Americans who have used porn over the years and all those who are having affairs with that, Ashley or some website, or something like 35 million. Do you really think that that wouldn't be used against people, especially if there's a politician? Of course that's going to be used. We've seen lesser things used. But who gave all these people the right to do all this, and why do we tolerate it?
I mean, essentially, I think it comes down to that a lot of companies have realized that having data on customers is really valuable. They think they can use that data to better target advertisements, to sell you things better. And that's more or less what it comes down to. It comes down to you are now the product. You are what they are, who they're trying to sell to. And so if they have more data, they think they can sell to you better. The problem is they've sort of snuck these features in without people realizing it. They've sort of slowly raised the temperature, and we haven't realized that now the water is boiling all around us. And so there, you know, the great thing is there are things you can do. In some cases, not all, but there are things you can do to fight back and to protect yourself. And I think if more people take those sorts of actions or buy the sorts of privacy-sensitive products, then maybe manufacturers, you know, the large corporations will start to realize, actually, there's a market for the privacy side of things.
Mark Zuckerberg is one of the wealthiest people on the planet. I don't know what his current wealth was, but I believe at one time it was around $34 billion.
Yep.
Has anyone just ever asked this fella, you have all the money in the world you could ever need, you have recognition, you're a celebrity, why do you need to spy on people to make more money?
I don't know if anyone's asked him that. If they did, I would imagine the answer would be probably something to the effect of, it's not his wealth. It has to go back. You know, Facebook is a publicly traded company. And so they have, for better or worse, an obligation to their stockholders to make profits. And so that's what they put first. And, you know, I think that's essentially where it comes to. I think if you ask Facebook, too, they'd say, you know, we're not spying on anyone. We keep the information really secure. No human actually sees it. It's all automated. But what I think they don't realize is that regardless of whether or not a human sees it, when people know they're being spied on, if there's that chance, they change their behavior. And that's really our biggest concern with spying. You know, even if no human ever, you know, reads the emails that you write, if you know someone or if you know that something is scanning your emails, you may not write, you know, as interesting a love letter to your wife. You may not write powerful a political letter to your friends or something, or your family or something like that. You know, people tend to censor themselves when they know they're being watched, even if no one's on the other end of the equipment that's watching them.
Well, Jeremy, I want you to expand on two areas with what you just said. First, we now know, based upon Snowden's revelations, and those were not hacked revelations, those were ones he observed from being inside,
yep,
and putting it down,
yep,
or downloading it, access to the information. But also what Benny and other National Security Agency whistleblowers have come forth with, Karakawa, et cetera, that the government does indeed have specialists, whole rooms full of people that all they do is download and analyze. They're actually analyzing people's websites, what they post, their conversations, to see what kind of psychological profile they have. This is something that most Americans, not even the media, are aware of. I'm aware of it because we're doing research on it. And that's the first. The second is, and I think this should be concerned to all the people listening right now, is I do not want to see our federal government become any stronger, because the stronger it becomes, the more nefarious and oppressive it becomes, because look at what they're strengthening, the federal intelligence agencies.
Yep.
And they're working hand in hand with private intelligence contractors to expand their surveillance activities on everyone. So do you believe that this will strengthen the government spying on the population? For example, couldn't the National Security Agency or Homeland Security, in effect, be a third-party vendor purchase all of this data from the big telecom firms? In other words, might this all be a roundabout way for the feds to gather intelligence on Americans more efficiently and effectively and bypass other federal laws regarding surveillance?
So to be clear, what the Republicans are trying to repeal, it won't have any official effect on, you know, whether or not the government needs a warrant or anything like that. But you're absolutely correct that it's going to increase the amount of data that your ISP collects on you, and then the government with a warrant, you know, if it's the local police with a warrant or if it's the NSA without a warrant, you know, the information will be there for them to go get. And so this is definitely the case where if we kept these privacy rules, there would be no incentive for your ISP to store this sort of information on you. And so when the cops came or the NSA came for it, your ISP would say, sorry, we never recorded that. We can't give you anything. But if these rules get repealed, absolutely. We are going to see basically yet more locations where more information about you, about what you do online, who you talk to, is going to be recorded. And you can bet that it's going to be a treasure trove for the federal government. Absolutely. I think that's really the big concern. In terms of, you know, you think about government spying in this sort of scenario.
Jeremy, for 33 years, I was on the radio 5 days a week on WPFW in Washington, D.C., and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I had a lot of government employees listening, and when I would do a lecture, like at George Washington University, it'd be packed, 1,300 people. And afterwards, I would have time I would always set aside for anyone who wanted private conversations, and these would go on for hours. And I never will forget my very last lecture there, which was about 3 years ago. Someone told me, he said, Gary, I can't tell you who I am or where I work, but I'll just simply say some of your comments tonight were extremely conservative. You don't know how much we're doing. And he said, he said, are you aware that we already have the ability now and have models, though they're not able to be put into society, they could enhance babies' genetics so that you could literally have a menu that you could sit down with your gynecologist and say, I'm with this height, this color. He says, we have that. He says, that exists. He says, we also have a new chip that is smaller and smaller. 10 years ago, it was the size of a grain of rice. Today, it's the grain of sand. And yeah. in that, we have the capacity. Here's what he told me. He says, we have the capacity to impact your mood, your blood pressure, your blood sugar. We also have the capacity to impact putting you to sleep or waking you up with this one piece, but we cannot bring it forward at this time. It won't be brought forward, but it's ready because you have to first adapt to the public that somehow this will be good for them. Oh, think of mom who has high blood pressure but didn't check it. Now she'll know that she has high blood pressure. Take your meds. Oh, you ate the wrong food and now your blood sugar. Now this will help them. Oh, little Tommy is having a temper tantrum and he can't be controlled with his ADD. Now he, instead of his Ritalin, will be able to let Tommy calm down. And I'm thinking, this is horrible. And yet this isn't in discussion. He said they have it now. Does that concern you?
I mean, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I'm probably already about as concerned as I can get. I mean, knowing the sorts of things that the intelligence community, the capabilities they have, particularly with regard to, you know, spying online, I mean, they pretty much already can see all of the traffic. And so anyone who doesn't realize that really needs to, you know, wake up in some sense and realize what's going on.
Finally, Jeremy, Trump is fixated and obsessed with spying, and one of his campaign statements was an intention to expand the American surveillance apparatus even more because he promised increased security. He also said cyber war is the future of warfare, and therefore he would focus upon cybersecurity, and another term implying loss of net neutrality. And many of Trump's appointees, such as Jeff Sessions, opposed the U.S. Freedom Act under Obama that protected these civil liberties. So a hypothetical question, if the Trump regime were given its ability to have all of its regulations that it wanted in controlling the Internet and our cell phones and all of our communications, even other electronic devices such as television sets, smart meters, the new higher G5 frequencies for Wi-Fi that the FCC is pushing through and can enhance surveillance, plus what is called the new smart city. As you know, $1 billion was given by the federal government, by the Pentagon, to the University of, I think it was University of New Mexico, to create a model for a new city that every single thing in that city would be spies, meaning spied upon. Every street light, every corner. You couldn't go anywhere where you weren't digitally being monitored, your eyes digitally monitored, your everything about you. Every conversation you're having is going to be monitored because there'd be thousands and thousands and thousands of microphones all hidden. And that didn't seem to get any interest in the media at all. Nothing. It's like it didn't happen, but it did happen and it is happening. Yep. Your final thoughts?
I mean, my final thought is, the things we're seeing the Republic and the Congress push through are just absolutely mind-blowing. And, you know, I think we can stop them. I think we can convince enough of them that it's a bad idea. But we have to make our voices heard. So thanks so much for having me.
Well, wait, is your foundation a voice for the people?
We certainly try. So we are a nonprofit that is entirely predominantly member funded. We take very little money from corporations. And because we're suing them all the time, almost basically no money from the government. And of course, you know, you can see everything we do. It's front and center. We publicize it all. So
Then I want to support you completely. And I'm asking the people in this audience, we have an advocate. We have a highly educated, intelligent advocate who is out there working on our behalf. So please support the EFF.org website. That's the foundation. And Jeremy, thank you very much. Jeremy, by the way, is a senior technologist for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That's the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So we do have advocates. We have a calls to action. So do not feel frustrated. Don't feel overwhelmed. Don't feel somehow, gee whiz, how can I deal with this? I don't have the science. But the people who do are there working on our behalf. Much appreciated all your work, Jeremy.
Thanks so much for having me.
All the best to you. And that is Jeremy, let me spell his name, G-I-L-L-U-L-A. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.